Well, it's a continuation of microscopy, so I don't have very much to say today. Just want to mention a couple things, mainly because these are two things that have confused people in the past. One of which is how to estimate cell size. It's explained in the manual, but a lot of people don't get it. When you look through a scope, as I've talked about last time, you see a field of view, right? That's a pretty good circle. And it always looks the same size to you, as I was saying, but it's not, right? The actual diameter of it depends on which objective you're using. And that's why even if, not all scopes have them, but even if you have a scope that has tick marks in it, a scale, you'll never see any units on that scale. There can't be, because how far the distance is between tick marks depends on which magnification you're using. So that they're just tick marks themselves. You'd actually have to calibrate them using a special slide that we don't use in here. So that's not how we're doing it. It's really fairly straightforward, but it's confusingly written or something because people don't get this very often. Let's just say, though, you have a cell in here that you're looking at. If you want to estimate the size, just use the mechanical stage to move it to any edge. Let's just say right here. Okay? It can be on any edge, though. Move it right to the edge. And then simply imagine a bunch of identically sized cells. Copy it in your mind, but line them up. Try to estimate how many it would take end to end to go all the way across. In this case, it looks like 7. All right? Well, all you need to do is look up what the actual diameter of the circle is, which you can find in the manual based on which objective lens you're using. So the actual diameters are given for this particular scope in your manual. That's the important part. You have to make sure you look at that table. And then simply divide by the number of cells it takes to get across it, right? Each one of these is roughly 1/7 of the diameter. So you would look up the diameter and divide by 7. If it takes 2 to get all the way across, you would divide by 2, and so on. That's all there is to that. Okay, so that's pretty straightforward. Another thing is that in one of your wet mounts, today you're basically making a bunch of wet mounts. And in one of them, in which you look at the Elodia leaves, you're first looking at them under just pure water, which is what kind of environment? Hypotonic. Pure water is always hypotonic, right? You can't get more watery. So you look at them under a hypotonic environment, and then you're changing the environment by adding some salt water. Well, first of all, when you do that, you're not taking off the cover slip. You make your wet mount, you keep your cover slip in place until you throw it away. But once you have your cover slip in place and you've viewed it before you manipulate it, then you can just put drops of pure water or salt, whatever you're going to, right on the edge, on just one edge. And capillary attraction will basically suck that underneath between the two pieces of glass. And you can actually watch it happen, but give it a couple minutes for it to quit changing before you make your final observation. Okay, well anyway, keep in mind these are plants. So plant cells, as we've talked about, have cell walls. The cell walls are rigid, more or less. I mean, they bend a little bit, but they stay in place. So they're not going to get bigger or smaller. And, you know, it's kind of like a grid, not perfect, but the cells are kind of square or rectangular, kind of like bricks in a wall. That size is not going to change like it would for an animal cell when you change the environment. But when you have hypotonicity, wateriness on the in the environment, osmosis is going to bring the water in, correct? And That water not only enters the cell, it enters the central vacuole. And the central vacuole does not contain any photosynthetic pigments. The reason that these cells look green to you when you look at them through a scope is because of the chloroplasts. Sometimes the entire cell looks green, but it never actually is. You're just seeing chloroplast distributed basically throughout the cell if it looks all green. But when you give it a watery environment, that water is going to go into the cell and then into the central vacuole. And the central vacuole is kind of like an animal cell in the sense that it has only a flimsy membrane. So it does get big. The central vacuole will get big in the case of hypotonicity. And it'll get so big that it'll push everything in the cell to the edges, including all the chloroplasts. So under hypotonicity, you should see green, very, very vibrant green edges and then clear centers. And tell me if that doesn't make sense, but that's because of water coming in. When you give it salt, that's good. That's the opposite environment, right? So water's going to leave, and that central vacuole is going to get so small that it'll allow plenty of room for all the chloroplasts to spread out. And that's when it will look like the whole cell is green, even though it's not. And the green will be a little fainter because it's spread out more. But you won't see big empty spaces anymore. You'll see just a green background under hypertonicity. So go ahead and observe that. And the only other thing I'll say is, when you're looking at your potatoes, you make a very thin slice of a potato. Ideally, you would make it one cell thick, but that's pretty hard to do. Let me just exaggerate it. If you have the edge of a potato here, don't cut an entire slab off, because that will be definitely too thick. Take the razor blade and start here, and I'll just exaggerate the size of the wedge. Just shave off a wedge-shaped thing. The reason it's important for the wedge is because a very thin wedge, you can look at that very edge of it, and it will be very thin that way. All right, that's it.